Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Good weekend, guys.
Absolutely.
Solid, solid weekend. Great, great Sunday of sports. Cowboys got a big win against the Jaguars. Big Ben got the Steelers back on track. But why not start with the most anticipated matchup of the weekend, Chiefs and Patriots? Let's dive right in and get right to it. Patrick Mahomes taking on Tom Brady, future GOAT perhaps versus current GOAT for sure. Chiefs down 15 at the half, but take a three-point lead in the fourth. Brady, the legs, rushing touchdown. Pats take the lead, just over 3 minutes to go. Chiefs down seven now. Mahomes finds Tyreek Hill for the 75-yard touchdown. Third TD connection of the night, but Brady is really good at football. Finds his favorite target. That's Rob Gronkowski. Gets the ball inside the 10. Sets up that was, by the way, Gronk's 500th career reception. Sets up the game-winning field goal. Pats win this one, 43-40. Here is Tom Brady after the game.
When he was running, Tyreek was running to score. I said, good, you know, score quick. Because then we had, you know, enough time. They had one timeout left and gave us a little time to go down and kick the field goal.
Just to be able to go against the best, I mean, you want to compete against them every single day. And we got down, put ourselves in a huge hole. And I'm just proud of my team on how we fought to get back in the game. And we had the lead at one point, and we ended up not coming out with the win. But just that fight, I mean, it's something you can carry on and to the rest of this season.
I don't think this is an intimidating place at all. I think it's just the excitement of it being Sunday night against a great team. I think he got excited. I don't think it's intimidating for him at all. I think he rises to the moment when it's presented, and sure enough, I think he handled himself great.
There was a lot of good players on the field tonight. I mean, two good teams, and they both competed very hard. Came down to the final play of the game. There's a lot of good football players out there on both sides of the ball.
If offense is what you wanted, offense is what you got yesterday. It was a great shootout. We saw two very, very high-powered offensive teams going up against each other. CeCe, what was the key to the Patriots in their win over the Chiefs?
Well, it's fairly easy. The beginning of the game, the Kansas City not being able to get 7 points touchdowns compared to settling for field goals. We knew that was going to be important going into the game. I knew New England's game plan was going to be Sony Michel and run the football, short passing attack to try to be able to grind it out. And when you look at time of possession, Bill Belichick and this organization, they knew they couldn't stop Kansas City. So what'd they do? They ate up time of possession. And you look at the big disparity, time of possession, number of plays, running plays. Like, there's no way Kansas City's going to be able to win that type of football game. They were almost able to win it, though, because they are that talented. Patty Mahomes did come back from a shaky start. Very, very impressed. And I think Kansas City, when Pat Mahomes ran across the field to shake hands with Tom Brady, it wasn't as if this young guy had lost this game and been outclassed. It was just Kansas City and Patty Mahomes ran out of time.
Yeah.
And that was the only thing. That was some of the big takeaways from last night. It was an extraordinary football game.
It was a brilliant example of what Coach Mangini talks about all the time, and he'll be out here later, of the Patriots taking what the other team gives them. The Chiefs were staying in nickel coverage or an extra defensive back almost the entire game because they were afraid of Gronk. And up until the very end of the game, they seemed to neutralize Gronk pretty well until he made the two biggest plays of the game for the Pats. And so New England said, fine, you're going to have small people out there. We will dedicate ourselves to running the football. They ran the ball 38 times for 173 yards. Like, that was, they saw what the Chiefs were going to let them do, and they took full advantage of it. They weren't trying to prove any point. They weren't trying to do anything tricky. No, we'll just run it straight at you. Had the added benefit of keeping the Chiefs' offense off the field. And then you have a game where, I mean, it's very hard to beat a team that doesn't commit a penalty and doesn't punt. The Pats became the first team in the Super Bowl era to not have an accepted penalty against and to not punt the ball. So the fact that the Chiefs were even tied in this game is a little remarkable. It's because that offense is so deadly. And if the Chiefs defense gets a little healthier, whether that's Eric Berry coming back, which he might, Justin Houston coming back, which he will, then they'd have a much better chance in a rematch of this game. But they dug themselves a huge hole. You mentioned it. It wasn't just settling for field goals early, but right before the half, Patrick Mahomes made a terrible mistake. He threw the passes he's been making all year long into those tight windows across his body, got tipped up in the air in the end zone, and that's at least 3 points off the board, maybe seven. Like that, plus the other Mahomes interception early, those proved deadly for the Chiefs.
What does it say about Patrick Mahomes that he went into this game knowing that he was going up against arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, found himself down big time at the half, came back and was able to gain his composure and mount the comeback like he did? And you said it. This game came down to whoever had the ball last was most likely going to win this game, but put his team in a position to win. Says a lot about who he is as a young quarterback.
It really does. Most people, as Travis Kelce said, you know, New England playing there in Gillette, it's not intimidating. Well, and Tom Brady's there. Belichick's there. The fans, they're used to winning. You know, they're very, very smart football fans. It can be intimidating. It has been, especially the quarterbacks, 25 and under. They have a remarkable record there in Gillette. So to see that he has the insides, it's not something you can put your hand on. It's not a test at the combine. Because if it was a test at the combine, organizations would spend millions of dollars. It's that once you see them in primetime, in these big games, the game was not too big for him. Even though he made some mistakes, all quarterbacks make some mistakes. Tom Brady made some mistakes, fumbling the ball in the pocket to allow the Chiefs to be able to get back in the game. But anyone who is a Chiefs fan after watching last night, no, you're looking to the future, and this is as bright as your future has been since the 60s when they won some world championships then.
There's no question, but it's the first time they've had a franchise quarterback since the 60s. I mean, since Lynn Dawson. You joked about me bringing him up a few weeks ago, but that's the truth. And I said Friday that if the Chiefs win this game and Pat Mahomes plays great, it could be a game we look back to as a passing of the torch type of game. Now, Brady made it very clear he and the Pats are not ready to give that up, but I'm as confident this morning as I've ever been that the next great quarterback in this conference is number 15 for the Kansas City Chiefs. I am no longer entertaining the possibility that he's a one-year wonder, a flash in the pan, that this isn't sustainable. Now, if he doesn't have these types of weapons, are they going to be the highest scoring team? Things like that can change. But this guy has all of the tools that make you a great player. And now we've seen, whether it's on the road at Mile High, down double digits in a successful comeback, or on the road at Gillette, down double digits in a game he got back tied. If you remember last year, the Chiefs were down 3 at halftime against the Pats. They came back and won. And we talked about how it was the first time in 100-some games that Pats had blown a halftime lead at home against an AFC opponent. All these things. They hadn't blown a double-digit halftime lead at home in almost the entirety of the Brady Belichick era. The Chiefs were right there. They couldn't get a stop at the end.
If there was one thing you could point to why the Chiefs couldn't do it, maybe it was their defense. What's the one thing you took away from both these teams, from the Patriots and from the Chiefs?
If Kansas City has one pass rusher, they win that game. They win that game last night. And if Eric Berry can get back and be healthy, man, this to me, Kansas City is still the best team in the AFC.
So that surprised me to hear you say that. Because you think the Chiefs, it's more about who wasn't there for them defensively than what they can't do?
New England can't play better. No accepted penalties, right? One turnover. All the things going to big lead, playing at home. You know, Kansas City still has a one-game lead. Man, Kansas City, to me, I believe is going to be 14-2. That's what I believe the regular season record is going to be. Will New England be able to run the rest of the table? I don't think so. So I still believe Kansas City is going to get home field advantage.
It is a miss from the home field advantage side. It's a missed opportunity because while Kansas City still has a lead, they have essentially a half-game lead now. Had they won the game, it would have been a 3.5-game lead. They kind of would have put the Pats to bed as far as the Pats having a better record than them. As far as the game goes, it should be noted as far as the Chiefs' defensive injuries. They didn't have their two starting safeties were guys that weren't on the roster to start the season. They had three safeties injured, inactive. They had two outside linebackers injured, inactive. D Ford was the only player in their front seven that I think is a plus player. Justin Houston will be back. Eric Berry's a question mark about he's still dealing with that Achilles injury he suffered against the Patriots last year. This was I don't want to say it was a missed opportunity for Kansas City, but this was an opportunity to put the Patriots away as far as who's going to, if they have a rematch, where the game will be played. Now the game could be played in Gillette, but if it is, I think the Chiefs know we can win here. We can go here and win in this stadium, and a lot of teams don't know that.
Patriots come away with the win. 5 lead changes, 71 passing attempts, and a big offensive game for both teams. Coming up, though, we're going to talk some Cowboys. How did their offense explode against one of the best defensive teams in the league? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. We'll get to Dak in a second, but first, Ohio State's KJ Hill with the perfect one-handed touchdown catch. The ball doesn't move when it hits his hands.
The celebration here was great, too, where he pretended like he couldn't release the ball, trying to throw it off. He had to use his foot to kick it off his hand.
It's pretty cool. You don't see college kids doing too much of that. This was critical, too. Very aggressive play calling by the Buckeyes to have that decisive lead right there at the end.
Texans-Bills, check out the nice adjustment by DeAndre Hopkins here to make the catch.
He's finally, I think, for the first time in his career this year, getting the national notoriety for what a special football player he is.
Yeah, of course. He hasn't played with any good quarterbacks. He's been underrated for a long, long time. And, of course, there with Deshaun there, they are working out some of the kinks. I think that they can perform at a higher level, be a little more consistent.
Certainly in the red zone.
Cam Newton lobbing one up to Devin Funchess, makes a great touchdown catch over the defender, makes it look easy.
He does a tremendous job because he knows the DB's hands are going to come up where he catches the football to be able to pull the ball away from the DB. Great reaction. This is a crucial touchdown here as Carolina just tries to make a late comeback.
Carolina didn't show up to the game until the second half, down 17-0. They almost came back, fell short at the end.
All right, finally in Indy, Andrew Luck tries to throw a screen pass to Marlon Mack, bobbles it. One Jets defender tips it. Morris Claiborne takes it in for the pick six.
There is nothing in sports more disheartening, well, in sports gambling, than on Sunday afternoon when you're getting red zone all set up, getting your TV set up, get the Jets game on because it's the local game, 30 seconds after kick, and you're down 7-0,
and
you had the ball to start with. Thanks, Colts plus 2.5. I mean, Andrew, running back. Ugh. Ugh.
Minus the gambling, I had the same exact reaction.
I mean, I got the game on 8. Scott Hansen hasn't even said good afternoon to me on red zone yet. Siciliano.
Stop betting?
Because
Scott Hansen ain't his fault.
I'm going to be forced to, see.
Cowboys picked an interesting opponent with which to show off the offense we thought they didn't have, taking on the Jaguars first quarter. That was Dak, chunk of his career, our 82 rush yards. Second quarter, Dak to Cole Beasley. Beasley's first TD of the year. Dallas up 17-0 in the fourth. Zeke gets a rushing touchdown of his own. 15 of 106 yards there. Cowboys all over Blake Bortles and the Jags. 40-7 was your final. Dallas now 3-3 on the air. Here's Dak after the game.
We haven't questioned anything. It's that we leave the questioning to y'all. We've known from, I've told y'all from after the first week or second week that we weren't doing as well or performing to our standards, that we're 1, 2, 3 plays away. The difference was the night we made those plays, and we still missed a deep ball here, missed a play there that just allows this offense to be that more explosive. So, I mean, we know what we have. We know what we've got. So it's important us just stick together, stay confident, and know the team that we have. And it was great to go out there and put on display.
How much of a shock is it that this defense comes out and gets their ass beat, considering the talent you guys have?
I don't know, man.
You guys have played together a lot as a secondary. How do you kind of explain some of the blown assignments that you guys had early in this game?
That was fun.
Coach said that he felt like it wasn't an effort issue. It was a miscommunication issue. Do you agree with that?
I don't know.
Jalen, what challenge did Cole Beasley pose today?
I don't know.
Defense usually plays with a lot of swagger and confidence. What needs to happen to kind of get you guys motivated?
I don't know.
Hey, you got what it takes in this room to kind of regroup and get back on track?
Yeah, we'll see.
Is this still the best defense in the NFL, Jalen? Is this still the best defense in the NFL?
We ain't playing like it.
Well, it is a good thing Jalen Ramsey wasn't getting paid by the word, because he would have no money. This had to have been your surprise game of the weekend when you looked at scores. I don't think too many people saw this one coming against this Jaguars defense. How surprised were you that the Cowboys just blew out Jacksonville?
Well, you have to be surprised. And looking at not only at the final score, but throughout the game, Jacksonville basically was never in the game. And you can interview Jalen, and yes, because he's had some interviews and he had some spicy comments and everything. But Jaguars defense, they can only do so much. When we talk about teams, Nick asked me about the Jaguars, Does the defense feel like they have to play a perfect game to win game? No, they don't have to play a perfect game, but they do realize, just like all the other great defenses that have led teams, that being Ray Lewis's Baltimore Ravens team or any other great defense you want to go, there's always some conflict between the offense and defense because the defense knows. No, they don't have to just do their job. They have to do more than their job. Offense started this game, take the opening kickoff, 3 and out. Next series, 3 and out. Next series, 7 plays. Next series, 3 and out. Halftime. Next series, 3 and out. 5 of the first 6 series, 3 and out. So you can ask Jalen as much as you want to. You can ask about the slot receivers, but until they get a better offense, until they get more explosive, 65, they couldn't even run the ball. That's what Jacksonville can do. So there's a lot of questions going to this. There was no game more surprising than this because Jacksonville is not a bad football team. They played an awful football game yesterday against the Dallas Cowboys.
I want to talk about the angle you approached there, which is it does feel to me, watching the Jags, that their defense loses an element of energy or swagger even if they're down early. Like when it was down 10-0, I felt watching the game, well, if the defense doesn't score, they're screwed because of who their offense is. And it felt like the defense knew the same thing. Like when that defense, if it's a close game, if it's one score game or they have the lead, they're flying around. When they get down because they know it is a 1-in-10 shot that their offense has a quick strike, that their offense goes and gets that touchdown right back, they seem to lose almost, I don't want to say motivation because that's not the right word. They lose some of the belief that this is going to be our weekend. With that said, credit to the Cowboys for doing something I did not think they could do. Could they win? Sure. Could they score 40 points? Could they do it the way they did it? Could Dak have? We've been saying for a few weeks, man, they say Dak, Jerry Jones says, wants to be a mix of Jared Goff and Cam. Dak's career high going into yesterday's game, rushing was less than 50 yards. There, all of a sudden yesterday, 80 yards on the ground. Zeke dominant on the ground. Dak didn't have some huge passing game. Aside from Cole Beasley, no receiver caught more than one pass. Mm-hmm. All our concerns about the Cowboys' offense, about lack of weapons on the outside, they were still true yesterday, but they were so good on the ground. Their defense was dominant. Jalen Smith looks like an all-pro caliber player for the second consecutive week. That this is the Cowboys' path to victory. They're not going to be dominating victories like this, but very good defense, running the ball with Zeke and Dak, and don't make mistakes on offense.
We criticized this Dallas team for their lack of creative play calling and their lack of taking chances in the last couple of weeks. What did you see that was different yesterday than we'd seen in the last couple of weeks?
Nothing. Offensive line played about the best game I've seen them play in 2 years. That's the reason why it was such a dominant performance by their quarterback and by Zeke running the ball and their defense. They're a combination of a very, very physical defense, got after the quarterback, took them out of their running game. Jacksonville, how many big plays is Jacksonville going to make against you? So if you're talking about Dallas, like you can talk about the names and stuff, but it's about their defense being able to shut them down and their offensive line punch Jacksonville's front seven in the mouth because it was not the passing game. They did score a couple of touchdowns in the red zone on short passes, but it was the offensive line. I thought the continuity and how they blocked and how they took over this game was the most important thing.
I thought the only thing that was different in this game as opposed to what they'd done the previous 5 weeks, and I don't know what you think, C, is they clearly had more designed Dak runs. Like more of the, whether it was RPOs or whatever it was, where Dak had the option or it was designed for him to run the football. But they didn't take, you had said 8 shots downfield. Then you'd said 4 shots downfield.
Yeah, didn't need it.
Right. Then on Friday you had said 2 shots downfield, and I think that's what they took in this game. But they didn't, like you said, they didn't have to have it. They didn't have any huge plays in the passing game. What was their longest pass of the game? 27 yards? I think the one to Michael Gallup was their one big passing play. Like, but they didn't have to because they were getting seemingly 6 yards every time they ran the football, and they knew once you're up 17-0 on the Jags, if you don't make a mistake, you win that game.
So is the answer then let Dak run the ball a little bit more? Because is that the only difference? I mean, they blew this open.
Deshaun Watson, didn't he say he wanted to run the ball? Did he enter the game with a punctured lung?
Yeah, his bruised sternum, cracked rib, and a partially collapsed
lung. Yeah, so no, don't run the ball. I mean, this was good for one game plan. That's not sustainable. He's okay. Not going to rush for 80 yards. His career high was 50 yards. Let's keep everything in proper perspective. If they need to play great defensive football, they need to control the line of scrimmage. They have 42 rushes. They are not going to lose a game where they have 40 rushes in a football game. So this is not an explosive Cowboy team. This is a path to victory. led by their defense and by their offensive line. Let's keep it to what it really was. Let's not try to make it into something sure. that it wasn't.
And for, on the Jags side of things, this is the problem in today's NFL with being a team that is all defense, very little offense. If the defense has a shaky quarter, you're sunk. Like you saw in the game we talked about to start with, the Chiefs offense had a shaky half, and they were able to get back in the game. If you're built like the Jags, to last week against Kansas City, they're down 20-0 at half. That game's obviously over. This week against the Cowboys, down 24-0 at half. That game's obviously over. That defense has to play better to start these games to keep their offense in it.
Another shaky game from Blake Bortles. All right, time now for Put a Grade on It, sponsored by CarMax. Dak Prescott had a solid day, leading the Cowboys to a blowout win. He had 183 yards, two passing touchdowns to go along with a career-high 82 rush yards. And a touchdown on the ground. So, CC, I'll start with you. Put a grade on Dak Prescott's day.
You got to give him an A, especially with the rush yards. The rush combined, the way the offensive line played. Scott Linehan designed some called quarterback runs. Very, very creative for them to be able to give them some big plays and to give this offense some punch that we haven't seen.
I give him an A as well. It was very similar to a lot of games he played his rookie season. The Cowboys have good defense, great rushing attack. Dak makes no mistakes, mm-hmm. makes a couple big red zone throws, plays a clean game. Like, that is their path to victory. The outlier was his rushing performance, but Dak around 250 total yards, two touchdowns, no turnovers. That's exactly what you want from him. I said on Friday that his best hope against this Jags team was prayer. He proved me wrong. Well done, Dak Prescott.
Looked a lot like Mississippi State.
Oh, yeah, did.
Good day for the Cowboys. All right, take a break. Coming up, the Steelers won, but not without a little bit of controversy. Next on First Things First. The MLB postseason continues tonight with Game 3, the NLCS. Manny Machado and the Dodgers taking on Christian Yelich and the Brewers in L.A. Coverage begins at 6:30 Eastern on FS1. And the Fox Sports app. This has been a great series already.
Yeah, the Dodgers got the split in Milwaukee like they hoped, but it wasn't probably the way they thought it would be. Kershaw did not pitch well in Game 1, wasn't able to follow up his excellent NLDS start, but they got the win in Game 2, and now they try to take a series lead tonight in Los Angeles.
All right, time now for some stories to start your morning. Sony Michel rushing for 106 yards and two touchdowns in the win against the Chiefs last night. That's now 315 yards and four touchdowns in his last three games. Chris, how dangerous does Michel make this Patriots offense?
I mean, that's what they need. They need someone to run the football. Burkhead on injured reserve. They don't have a running back. And last year, they got a tremendous push from Deion Lewis. People don't realize he had 800 yards rushing before going to the Titans through free agency. Sony Michel, they used that first-round draft pick wisely.
And it just seems like they finally have, for the first time in a long time, a real bell cow back, a guy they don't mind giving the ball 20 to 25 times a game to, they think can handle the workload and get them around 5 yards a carry. That's what he's done the last 3 weeks.
They also realize they get a lot of friendly looks
yes.
because they throw the ball so much. So the fronts are easier to run to. So Sony Michel and the offense taking advantage of those.
All right, big upset in Miami yesterday. Despite Brock Osweiler starting in place of Ryan Tannehill, Dolphins outlasted the Bears 31-28 in overtime behind 380 yards and three touchdowns from Osweiler. See, how impressed were you with the Dolphins yesterday?
Man, you got to be impressed. And looking at this game before Tannehill comes up late on the injury report, Brock Osweiler, man, you're talking about a guy who's been disappointed. There was no better performance than what he had yesterday. Adam Case has a lot of confidence in him. He was on that staff in Denver
yep.
when John Elway drafted him. So finally getting some good juice out of that grape.
Osweiler said he's the only person that knows the offense better than Gase because of their time in Denver. But I want to talk about this from the other side. What an enormous missed opportunity for the Bears. All of a sudden,
yep.
Vikings playing better. You look at the Bears' two losses this year. They get a big lead on Green Bay, get conservative, and lose. Yesterday, they get a huge fortunate bounce. Miami's going into the end zone in overtime mm-hmm. to win. Fumble on the goal line. They played for a 53-yard field goal instead of trying to go make it a more manageable field goal, knowing that Cody Parkey's career long was 54. He misses. Miami drives back down and scores. This is a big – at the end of the year, we're going to look back on this game.
Albert Wilson was special in this game,
man.
Too.
All right, finally, let's talk about the Rams. They improved to 6-0, thanks in large part to Todd Gurley. He rushed for a career-best 208 yards and two touchdowns in the 23-20 win over Denver. Gurley now leads the NFL in rushing yards, rushing touchdowns, yards from scrimmage, and total touchdowns. He's good at football. Nick, what did you make of Gurley's performance yesterday?
This is why he's the best player on the most talented team in the league. I know Aaron Donald's on the team. I know Brandon Cooks is on the team. I understand they got Jared Goff, and Jared Goff's been excellent this year. He's their best football player. And yesterday, Jared Goff didn't play well. Yesterday, Jared Goff wasn't his sharpest. I don't know if it was the cold conditions in Denver or if it was just an off night. But whatever it was, Gurley was the reason they got out to the 20-3 lead. Gurley was a big reason as to why they were able to hold on to that lead late. He came as close as you can to winning an MVP as a running back these days without rushing for 2,000 yards last year. And he's going to have, it looks like, a similar performance this year, where it's tough at that position to win the MVP, but he has as good of a case as anybody. He's an extraordinary player and was the best player on the field all day yesterday.
A tremendous football player, but also Sean McVay and them, they do a great job of putting him in favorable situations. Why? They run the ball predominantly out of a three-receiver set. So you can only put so many people, and they do so much motion with the speed sweeps that they have a good game plan for a great player week in and week out. And based on the weather, and the temperature was in the 20s. So for the Rams to get this type of win, and Jared Goff, to me, it pays dividends mentally. Long term, can the Rams win in cold weather? That will be questions we'll ask. But now, after getting the win yesterday in Denver, where they had a huge snowfall before the game, it was not the best conditions for an L.A. team. I think this win was more mental than it was what the score was and everything. I think that the Rams will store it away long term and be able to take advantage of it.
See, the first month of the season, Rams were 4-0, but they hadn't left the state of California. They'd played home games. They had gone to Oakland. The last 2 weeks, in Seattle and in Denver, two of the toughest conditions, two of the toughest environments to play, they win both of those games despite, in my eyes, not playing their best game. In Seattle, their defense was shaky. In Denver, their passing game was shaky. So this is a great win for the Rams because this is a game that they can get tripped up in, where Denver, they get out to an early lead, Denver comes back. One note on the Broncos. The Broncos, once again, didn't take a quarterback at number 5, and they're probably going to regret that. But the player they took at 5, Bradley Chubb, he had a monster game yesterday. He had 3 sacks. He showed why a lot of people thought he was going to be the first defensive player taken in the draft.
Yeah, only Nick can give you a compliment and also a knife in your back.
No, it's not Bradley Chubb's fault. My point is a lot of Bronco fans are mad they didn't take Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
And anytime there's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, I understand.
But okay.
Yeah, Nick, right. Yes.
Compliment sandwich, see?
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Something
one nice, the
undefeated
truth,
team
else
left in the NFL.
And a smack in the face.
And it is the L.A. Rams. All right, let's move on. Big Ben and the Steelers heading to Cincinnati to take on a very good Bengals team. No Lev Bell, no problem for the Steelers. James Conner, 111 yards, 2 touchdowns on the day. But Cincy hung around. A buck 18 left in the game. Joe Mixon scores from 4 yards out. Bengals up 21-20. Steelers driving for the win. Roethlisberger finds Juju Smith-Schuster to put the Steelers in field goal range. Next play, Ben, Antonio Brown. He knows him. He loves him. 31-yard touchdown. Steelers pulling off the 28-21 win. After the game, Roethlisberger talked about his favorite running back, James Conner.
He was a bowling ball today. He was all over the place. What a great game. But, you know, I know it's his last game for us, so because Le'Veon's coming back. But I thought he did well in his last one. I don't know. That's just what I've heard.
Anybody heard anything from him?
Nope. I'm just going off what I hear from reports from you guys.
A few words, but a whole lot of snark out of Ben Roethlisberger. We'll get to the actual game in a second. But, see, what'd you make out of Ben's comments there about James Conner?
Oh, nothing. James Conner did play a good game. But Ben, he always adds a little bit. They didn't ask him about it. Like, he just added, just threw it in there at the end. Oh, it's his last game. He's going to retire. Ben, it was a good win. But
it was Ben was responding to the fact that Ben had been criticized by folks on shows like this for what he said last week about James Conner, about going to the coaching staff. The more notably, I thought, was Le'Veon Bell actually tweeted about a Steelers game positively. He sent James Conner the power emoji, and on one of his touchdown runs, James Conner said, tweeted back, "I learned it all from you." And so that relationship doesn't seem like it has any issues whatsoever. As far as Big Ben and Le'Veon
Bell. It'd been a lot more powerful if you had been there.
Sure.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Don't send me no tweet. Just come to work.
So anyway, he's slated to come to work this coming week, which is their bye, and then he will hopefully, if he says, take the field in week 8. All right, what did you take away from this win, CC? It's a good win over a very good Cincinnati Bengals team.
Oh, this was critical. Can you imagine what we were going to open up the show with if they go to 2-3? Bengals at 5-1. Like, this is a huge win. The Bengals had played, surprisingly, they're one of the 4 or 5 teams that maybe people didn't have their eye on, really off to a great start. Couldn't secure the win there. They played better than the Pittsburgh Steelers. They deserved the win. They couldn't make enough plays at the end of the game to be able to put Pittsburgh away. And it's Pittsburgh's grip on the AFC Central. And that's how they've had a grip on it on the North for a long, long time. And that's kind of the confidence that they had going into the game. I don't know if the Bengals think they can beat Pittsburgh on a regular basis.
I mean, that's what you saw. Like, the Bengals had a lot of opportunities to take this game and couldn't take advantage of it. Pittsburgh made some mistakes in the red zone. Pittsburgh had what looked like a touchdown. They didn't challenge it. They end up getting stoned 3 times, have to settle for a field goal. And then it opens the door, and the Bengals take the lead. And what's Pittsburgh do? 7 plays, 75 yards in 1:08. To rip their hearts out. And by the way, they probably didn't even need that final play because they were in field goal range, and Boswell is one of the more solid kickers in the league, even though this year has been a little shaky. But here's the other thing about Pittsburgh, that they now sit at 3-2-1. Last year, they were 4-2. Week 1 of the year, they squeaked out a win in Cleveland 21-18. This year, they're 3-2-1. Difference between this year and last year? This year, the week 1 in Cleveland, instead of winning 21-18, they tied it 21 apiece. And last year, week 6 was a launching point for them. They beat Kansas City. They ended up not losing again until they played New England late in the year in the famous game where Big Ben threw the interception at the end. Like, Pittsburgh got away with a bad start to the season. Now they have a bye. They have back-to-back divisional games coming up. And in a couple weeks, they could be back in first place in the AFC North, where it seems like they and Baltimore are the only two teams allowed to finish first in that division.
The concern in the first couple of weeks was this defense and how Pittsburgh just didn't have the defense to match their offense. This is the second week that their defense was able to at least contain. Were you happy with what you saw yesterday?
Well, you have to be happy containing them to 21 points. That's what gave the offense an opportunity to be able to get some momentum late in the game and to be able to steal this win. So, yes, they kept them in the game. Cincinnati had many of opportunities to be able to make that margin so decisive that Pittsburgh wouldn't have been able to win to end, but they couldn't make enough plays. They couldn't make that big play. Couldn't get A.J. Green free. So that's how Pittsburgh was able to hang into the game. And when you have a quarterback like Ben Roethlisberger, if you give him enough time, the Bengals try a casino blitz, an all-out blitz at the end. Pittsburgh gets into an audible. They throw a questionable pass. Was it a screen? Was it downfield? But Antonio Brown's able to score the touchdown on.
And the Bengals are being criticized for calling that zero blitz or casino blitz at the end of the game. One of their defenders said, "We never even practiced that play." But here's the thing. The Steelers are down 1 in field goal range. The reason you take that chance is because you're trying to sack Big Ben so you can either knock them out of field goal range or make it a much more difficult field goal. So I had no problem with the play call there. To your point about the Steelers' defense, last week, Atlanta, a very potent offense, hold them to 17. Cincinnati's been one of the more underrated offenses in football this year, hold them to 21. They don't need the defense to be great. They just need the defense to be average, because we know, even without Le'Veon Bell, the offense is extraordinary. If and when he comes back, now, he hasn't talked to anybody except for Jeremy Fowler, it would appear, but he's supposed to come back this week, then that's going to be, once again, one of the top 3 or 4 offenses in football.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, what has gone so wrong for the Oakland Raiders? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Former head coach Eric Mangini joins the show.
Good to see
show.
You, sir.
Good morning, Coach.
Did you use your Gillette Clear Gel this morning?
Oh, it looks like he did.
Twice.
Okay, no problem.
Twice.
Nice. Good. We're ready.
I can't get enough of it.
We're ready.
So So did I. All right, Coach, let's go overseas.
Damn.
The Raiders and Seahawks play a spot of ball over in London this weekend. Only one team fancied the trip, however. Raiders got pummeled 27-3.
She's hot.
Bring her back
right now. Bring her back.
Derek Carr had only 142 yards on 31 pass attempts. He was sacked 6 times, though. Insert line here about Gruden returning to football. Raiders fall to 1-5. Here is the aforementioned John Gruden on the state of his team.
We know what we have to do here. And I think I said yesterday or 2 days ago, we know we have a ways to go here. And today was a tough one.
You know, this being my 5th year, you want it now. You know, you want everything now. I know our fans want it now. Our players, our team wants it now. Our coaches want it now. And trust me, we are trying to do it now. It's because it's so easy in this league to let something like this happen, how the year has gone, people beating down on you, thinking, saying this, doing that, and to just go in the tank and just say, we're done. That's not what we do in Oakland. You know, I know that. You know, I know that's not how we do things. And I've been a part of things like this where it's hard at first, but I tell them all the time, I promise you, when we're on the other side of this, it'll be so worth it. Do not hang your head for a second.
All right, Coach, let me ask you this. What has gone so very, very wrong for the Raiders? I actually wrote very twice because things have gone pretty, pretty bad for the Raiders this season.
Well, there's a lot of areas that you can look at where there's problems. And one of the problems is the defense. They've tried to address it with a draft pick, whether it's in the secondary, the corner, the safety, haven't really been able to get that fixed. And then you move on from Khalil Mack, which when you have a pass rusher, it can help minimize some of those deficiencies that you have in the secondary. And then offensively, with my kids' school, whenever something goes wrong, they tell the kids they need to be a self-advocate. They need to speak out for themselves. And it strikes me that Derek Carr is such a nice guy that when things game plan wise that maybe he doesn't love, I don't know if he's self-advocating. I think he might just be taking
During the week.
Well, yeah, that process needs to be a collaborative process between the head coach and the quarterback. And when you get to Friday, you've got to have that plan in place that he feels really good about. And look, Derek a few years ago was on pace to be an MVP, and he did a great job of protecting the football. He's already got more interceptions this year than he had, you know, from his big season a few years ago. And getting to the point where that relationship between what John wants to do, what Derek wants to do, what they both need to do, that seems like it's not there yet. Add in the offensive line problems. He gets sacked 6 times yesterday. You know, they had a highly paid offensive line. Both guards are still second and third on the team in terms of salary cap, but they've got rookie tackles. It's figuring out what's the identity of this group and what direction are they heading and clearly articulating this is how we plan to get there.
Listen, they're one of the worst 5 offenses in football. They're one of the worst 5 defenses in football, and the special teams ain't great. So that's a recipe to be disastrous. But before I get into Derek Carr or Gruden, I want to ask both of you guys a question. Is there anything to be said for what trading your best player right before the season does to the spirit of the other 52 guys on the team at the time? As far as whether or not that tells those guys, this is, even if it's subconsciously, this isn't a year we're actually competing for a championship. And is that anything to do with a team that, while might not be the most talented team in the league, is clearly underachieving based on the talent level that they have?
They have too many guys that have played in the league that just have personal pride in what they do. So to say that, now we should talk about Khalil Mack, but to use it as an excuse for people not doing their job, no.
Okay.
I don't do that. It's professional football. This is not college, all right? This is not, let's go get one for the old team. No, you're being paid a lot of money to do a job. And when you're studying tape, getting ready for the opposition, when I'm getting ready for Seattle, no matter what my position's in, I'm not thinking about Khalil Mack. I'm not thinking, did the coach do the right thing? No, I'm trying to think about what can I do to get an advantage? What technique do I need? What are their tendencies so I can do my job? Now, we can keep making excuses, but man, Khalil Mack is gone, and he is not coming back. But I'm going to tell you what you are stuck with. You're stuck with that head coach. And to me, they don't have a lot of guys that look like they love playing football. Amari Cooper, he's a kid I know really, really well. And I heard just recently this week that Oakland potentially might give up on him, and he's available to be traded. I'm just telling you, Amari Cooper can play for my team. He is a great guy, man. He's the kind of guy that you would introduce to your partner's daughter. Like, he is a gentleman. Like, and for to see him not play with any type of enthusiasm, like, I've been knowing the kid a long, long time. It looks like the joy of football has been sapped from him. And I don't know the reason why, but I have known the kid for a long, long time. And he comes from the tough streets of Miami, Miami Northwestern High School, went to Alabama where it was not easy. I never saw the look on Amari Cooper's face the way I've seen him the first part of this season and what I saw yesterday there in London.
And we moved on to New England from Lawyer Malloy right before the start of the season. He went to Buffalo. We played Buffalo the first game.
31-0.
Yeah, they beat up on us. But after that, we moved past it. And Chris makes a great point. Guys can get hurt at any point. You can lose a player, and you can sit there and say, okay, well, this is the reason we're not successful. Or as a pro, you move on, and you go and try to figure out what the next answer is. Do I think the environment's tough when you bring in a new head coach, when you bring in a head coach that has a radically different philosophy, when you bring in that type of, there's been a volume of changes in terms of personnel, in terms of scheme, all those things, and then you're losing on top of it with giant expectations when he got hired. So you combine those things, and emotionally, it can be difficult for the team.
Before Gruden got back into coaching, what was the one yeah but about his coaching resume? Yeah, he won that Super Bowl, but it was... none of those were his players. That was all. That was he was taking over. And the question that I have, and I think it's a fair question, is whether or not, even if they didn't want to be 1-5, this is part of Gruden's plan. If the plan was always 2020 in Vegas, new team, new stadium, if the plan was to tear down everything they had with Reggie McKenzie, if the plan was, I said it, we couldn't figure out the Khalil Mack trade until it started to make sense where, if you know what, Gruden doesn't think Derek Carr is his quarterback. Gruden thinks I'm going to need a new quarterback, so I'm going to need extra draft picks, and I have the empowerment of a 10-year contract. So you know what? They are going to have to see this through with me. Because otherwise, what's happening in Oakland is baffling. This team was not supposed to be in the running for the number one pick of the draft, even after the Khalil Mack trade. But now Amari Cooper's on the trade block. The first round pick the year after Amari Cooper's on the trade block. Derek Carr, all of a sudden, what, he's the most turnovers in football, fewest, most dinks and dunks of anybody in football. Like,
Khalil Mack is gone.
Khalil Mack's gone. They got two first. Like, it sure feels to me like they are trying to almost expansion franchise the Raiders before you get to 2020 in Vegas and you get a fresh start and Gruden can say, these are all my guys.
Yeah, I don't believe that's part of John Gruden's plan. Any people that know John Gruden is not about losing, and especially getting embarrassed. Like, that's his product out there. That's all the brand of the Oakland Raiders, but that's John Gruden's product. That's his work out there. So I know John Gruden. John Gruden is not looking to 2020. Man, 2020 is a lifetime away, and I don't see that. They have made a lot of changes, but to say John Gruden is looking forward to 2020 moving to Vegas, no, this is the hand he's been dealt. The Khalil Mack thing, I believe, as a franchise, they were challenged as far as the bill to come up with that money. So they made a decision, we're going to trade him away, take the draft picks, but that was based on not being able to come to a deal with him that they felt in their future cap, it made the best interest of the club, Coach.
And coaches have egos, too, and no coach wants to come in, especially a coach who gets the contract like he got, and then take a beat down. There's whether you're a new head coach or in his situation, you're trying to establish legitimacy with the players that you have, the players that are going to be part of your future. You want legitimacy with the owner. You want legitimacy with the fans. You want to be able to say, okay, this isn't where we are, and we're going to be a lot better moving forward, as opposed to saying we're just going to tank it and then, you know, hopefully next year we'll be better.
I guess my question would be, because you and I have talked off the air about what coaches could do if they had real job security. We talked about, I think, in San Francisco with Shanahan and Lynch both getting six-year deals linked up together to where you're not worried you're going to be one and done or even two and done, and the plan it lets you put in place. When you have the security Gruden has, it allows you to take right more of a long-term view and say, I can be worried about what is best for the team holistically on a long-term level rather than right now more than most coaches would be able to?
Look, in an ideal situation, every head coach's job is to look forward. And when you make a decision, and that's one of the hard things as an assistant coach is you're looking at your world. You're looking through your lens. As a head coach, you're looking through all the lenses, and you're trying to put it in place where you can win a championship now and you can win a championship in the future. In terms of job security, I've thought I had job security at different points. I was told no matter what happens, you're going to be the head coach next year and then get fired. So, look, job security, whether you have 6 years or 10 years, you know, it's not
yeah,
as strong as
a that contract's a little bit different. We don't know exactly what it says. After 4 years, I think that's where John Gruden gets more of the control and the more of the resources start kicking in, I think, after 4 years, too. But no one wants to get their nose bloody.
And you, right. And you may have financial security, but you may not have job security. There's a very big difference.
Is it Monday night? Is available?
Right. Stick around, Coach. Coming up, how are the Patriots able to outlast the Chiefs? That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Coach Mangini. Talking Chiefs and Patriots, Pat Mahomes, Tom Brady. Chiefs down 15 at the half. Mount the big comeback. Take a three-point lead in the fourth. Tom Brady rushing it in. Just over 3 minutes to go. Chiefs down 7. Mahomes to Tyreek Hill, 75-yard touchdown, their third TD connection of the night. But Brady, never to be counted out, finds his favorite target, Rob Gronkowski, who gets the ball inside the 10, his 500th career reception. A field goal wins it as time expires. Patriots take the 43-40 win over the Kansas City Chiefs. Here is Tom Brady after the game. So, Tom Brady, obviously giving props to the Kansas City Chiefs, knowing full well what they expected all week. Travis Kelce came out and said, you know what, the game was not too big for Patrick Mahomes, that he was ready and set for it. And then Patrick Mahomes came out and said, you know what, I really liked what we did here today. We didn't come out with the win. So, all around, they understood what was at stake and what they got. What do you think was the key to the Patriots' win here?
Well, two things, really. I thought they did a really good job on third down. That was one of the biggest things, which allowed New England to sustain drives, which took Kansas City out of sustained drive and limited their opportunities. That was one component of it. The second thing was what they did in the red zone. I think they were 2 for 5 in the red zone. Whenever you can hold them to field goals instead of touchdowns, that's huge as well. But as you look at this, I thought New England did a nice job of using pressure. And really, Denver the week before showed that pressure creates some problems for Mahomes. Now, I didn't think Denver did a good enough job of keeping him in the pocket when they pressured or when they were able to get some pressure on him even with four, and that was an issue. I thought New England did a better job of keeping him in the pocket. And to me, this is the way to go with him, is to pressure him, make sure he's in the pocket, and it's how do you want to die? If you sit back in coverage, he's going to eat you up. If you pressure him, which they did a decent amount on third down, you've got an opportunity to make a play just like they have an opportunity to make a play. And I would imagine these last two games for Kansas City, people are really going to look at much more closely to say, okay, this is a way that we can potentially slow them down. And the information is slowly going to build up, and we'll see how Mahomes continues to respond. You know, 5-0 last year, 5-0 this year. You know, last year, would they lose? You probably remember.
They lost to the Steelers. They lost to the Steelers in week 6, and they lost 6 of 7.
Yeah, so, you know, that was with Alex Smith, and the offense was explosive. So let's see where this goes now with a new quarterback, but very familiar situation.
Yeah, I don't think that they're the same team as last year. The reason why, because I believe they're running more volume of offense. I believe also they take more chances with Mahomes going down the field because they trust him, trust his playmaking ability compared to someone like Alex Smith. So I believe they'll grow from this game, but we know that the personnel that they put on the field, we would have been shocked if that personnel Kansas City could have slowed down New England. Now, they slowed them down enough where they were able to get and create the turnovers that they were able to get back in the football game. But a lot of this boiled down to the first half being Kansas City moving the ball, first three drives, not being able to get a touchdown, and the last drive before halftime trying to take a chance, throwing the ball across his body in the end zone where it gets tipped and ultimately gets intercepted. That, to me, ended up being the difference because they didn't get 3 points, let alone 7 points. But when you look at in the fourth quarter where they were, that drive right there was very, very important, knowing that you're coming out the second half and you're going to get the football. You could have done exactly what New England England does to teams. Drive down the field right before halftime, get points, and a lot of times because they defer and get the second half kickoff, they come back and go down and score on you, which Kansas City did.
So, listen, I want to first of all give New England full credit because, I mean, this was a game where they didn't have an accepted penalty against them. They didn't punt the football. That hasn't happened in the NFL since the merger. This was a critical game for New England as far as their ability to be the one seed in the AFC. If they lose this game, they're 3.5 back at Kansas City, and they won it. They won it.
Well, this is the thing, too. I think I should stop you. The thing about and the reason why New England is so good, they don't think about those types of things. Now, I'm not saying in the game, like, you know, it's still October, and ultimately it might be important, but New England is able to isolate this week and make it all about this week compared to long term, and that's what separates them from any other team. And when I try to cover them, I try to think like them. I just think it gives fans the real perspective of how different they are than the other teams.
I wasn't saying that they changed their approach because of that. I was just giving the magnitude of the game was.
And most people think right, that way. Absolutely. I thought it's appropriate, right, because we should stop people. It's still October. And that's what Coach Mangini, he laughs about the schedule. Home field event, like.
Sure, but I get that. And I understand the Patriots aren't doing that, and we can laugh about the schedule. But we said on Friday, if the Pats fall to 3-3, the Chiefs are 6-0, and they have the head-to-head tiebreaker, it is hard to see a path to, if they play again, that game being in Gillette as opposed to being in Arrowhead.
But let me just stop you there. How many did they lose last year?
They're not the same team as last year.
But I'm just saying, what you're saying is it's hard to see a path. But last year at this time, Kansas City was 5-1, and you would have said it's hard to see a path, and then they lose five out of the next six. Things change dramatically.
The thing is, we were on TV last year at this time, and everyone can attest the feeling around the Kansas City Chiefs was not this one. Because I understand they started 5-0, Coach.
I don't think it matters which team. I think it matters trying to project the one seed, like regardless of Kansas City.
Sure, okay.
Throw that part of it out, Coach.
Last year, Jacksonville was 3-3, and everybody was excited at this point. This year, they're 3-3, and everybody's in the tank. I mean, it's just
throw the seeding part out of it. Forget that part of it. The part I was trying to give the Patriots credit for is the Chiefs clearly had a game plan defensively of they didn't want to let the Tom Brady short passes beat them, and they didn't want to let Gronk beat them. So they stayed with smaller people out on the field, and the Patriots gashed them. Sony Michel was great again. They ran the ball 38 times for 175 yards. The Pats deserve a ton of credit. But to your initial point about now teams will look at this as a book on how to slow down Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs scored 40 points. In the second half, Mahomes was nearly flawless from either just the eye test or the statistical test. I don't think this was a game where the Pats' defense stepped up. I think this was a game where the Chiefs' defense could not force a stop. The Pats' offensive game plan was extraordinary, and once again, New England found a way to win because they refused to make any mistakes aside from the one Tom Brady strip sack. Like, to me, that was the story of the game.
Well, they scored 33 points. One was a kickoff return.
Well, he didn't score on the kickoff
return. He was intercepted twice and could have been intercepted again on the one that McCourty dropped. They were 2-for-5 or 2-for-6 in the red zone. They didn't play very well on third down. There's a bunch of teams that are going to look at this and say, okay, what can we take away? And I would say go back to the week before because Denver did a bunch of good things against them too. That's the point I'm making is as this season unfolds, as this kid plays more, as people start to see that, he's going to get a lot of what he struggles with. And then the question is, what's his next answer? And that's the only reason I'm trying to tempo down the enthusiasm.
Is it him or is it the defense, would you point to as a reason you need to temper down that enthusiasm a little bit? Chris made an interesting point before that the Patriots played about as well as they could play yesterday, but the Chiefs didn't fully reach their ceiling, and there's a lot more there, but I'm wondering how far they can go with this defense that they right now have to carry with them into and out of games.
Well, it's going to be a struggle. The offense is always going to have to be on. Nobody can get hurt. And the reason I go back to tempering down, we just talked about Derek Carr. I mean, at one point he was the favorite to be the MVP. Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, all these different guys who pop and do such great things early. It's just, let's see as people start to understand him. It's a lot of smart defensive coordinators. Let's see what he continues to do.
Yeah, I believe Kansas City has overwhelming personnel and an unbelievable scheme. I do believe Patrick Mahomes is a special, special player. I do believe that they are the best team
in the AFC. New England played almost a perfect game on paper. I know they'll look at the film and say they made mistakes, sure. But when you look at the lack of personnel, when you look at who was not on Kansas City's roster when they started this, Kansas City can leave this game with a sense of optimism because you can't get off to a worse start as far as offense settling for field goals and still being able to generate that comeback, forcing turnovers with that and generated some pressure on Tom Brady. So with Justin Houston, if he was only one to come back, I would have a lot more confidence in Kansas City playing against the Pats again.
Let me just ask you this real quick, because you very clearly don't want to anoint anybody, and I get that. Is there a quarterback in the league under the age of 26 that you would rather have the future of than Mahomes? Is there one?
We're talking about it in the moment where he's red hot, and we've seen all the good things. Let's see when he deals with adversity. It's like making a decision with
coach, isn't being down
a hundredth of the information.
But isn't being down double digits in Denver adversity, and they won? Isn't facing the Jags adversity? Isn't being down 15?
Yeah, it is adversity, but it's not enough for us to be able to move from the years and years of I'm going to take my time. That's the thing you keep. There's just a difference in philosophy of how coach is going to evaluate players and how you're going to evaluate
which
players.
Which is totally
last
fine.
Year it was Deshaun Watson.
He was unstoppable.
The year before that it was another quarterback.
Which is totally, I understand that, and it's totally fine. But so I guess the reason I was asking, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot with a name. I didn't know if there was a young quarterback that you had seen enough from, or if your general philosophy is all of them, no matter how good they've been, until it's been call it 50 games, I can't believe in any of them. Because and if that's the philosophy, there's no criticism there. It's just something. I didn't know if there was a guy you'd say, no. Even though he's young, that's a guy I believe in. Carson Wentz. Some people would say, I know you believe Carson Wentz is a star no matter what. Like, I didn't know if you have a guy like that or if for all of them it's wait and see.
And, well, here's the thing that I don't know about Carson Wentz. We didn't see him in the playoffs. We didn't see him get in those big moments and how he responded in those big moments. So there is a question mark there. Is there a lot of encouraging things about Patrick? Of course there is, but do you remember Derek Carr? Let's just go back to our last segment, how much everybody felt like he was the next emerging star, and now people are really down on him.
I still believe there's a significant gap from where we are and people just trying to get ahead of the story. I just been covering the league long enough, played in the league long enough that I'm going to be on the side of, you know something? I didn't know about this guy, and I don't mind being wrong about it.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.